WKRP Live with Cedric Miller has a desire to transport their listeners to a world of thought upon issues like Christian values, the appeal of Christianity, contracts with God, tenement stories, and so much more. Cedric Miller will be interviewing up-and-coming gospel artists, pastors and community leaders, and people just like you. We're going to figure out, together, what the heck is really going on in society today. It's an open forum, and call-ins are encouraged, so tune in and become a part of the discussion at the global table, where all points of view are considered.
And we're here. Thank you all for tuning in to WKRP Live Talk. And I am C. Miller, and we have a very, very special guest here today. He is Mr. Daryl Bailey. He's with the Montgomery County DA's office. And he is a very, very roundabout guy. And Daryl is one person I can say that goes around to communities in different places and just he's a people person for most. And I'm glad that he's here today. But first of all, I would like to thank the Lord for enabling us to see another day and be glad to be on this program. And a shout out to my lovely wife and kids, Miss Elena Miller. And now today we have a very serious topic I want to talk about. Today's topic is about violence. I mean, just to me, just ill-gotten violence, man. I mean, people are being murdered in some in the capital city. It's like an uprising. And I wonder what in the world is going on. And my guest here today is the help. I don't know. He has a lot on his hands, too, and a lot on his plate. So I'm going to bring him in right now, Mr. Daryl Bailey, and he's going to talk to us about even this weekend, this other day, there was a killing last night. This is pathetic. I'm just praying that somehow that will become a resolution, something. Is everybody just mad? Or what do you all think is going on? And I'm going to let you hear from my guest right now, Mr. Daryl Bailey from the DA's office. Daryl?
Hey, Cedric. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, man, great. I thank you so much for accepting to come on this interview, man. And Daryl, it's like, I know your hands have been filled. I mean, your files have just been off the roof, man, because of the violence that's been going on in Alabama and Montgomery right now.
Yeah, Cedric, it's unbelievable. You know, the last count that I had probably about a month ago, I counted all the ones that we had pending, and we have 116 homicide cases pending in our office right now, which is terrible. It's horrible because, you know, people sometimes don't stop and realize that there are victims behind each one of those statistics. There are family members that will not see their loved ones again, you know, not see them for their birthday or see them, you know, at their wedding or at family events and, you know, or at the church or wherever. These people have been killed and are not coming back. And there's a story behind each one of those statistics. And, you know, we're trying here in my office to deal with it in the criminal justice system as best as we can to make sure that these folks who are convicted, who are charged and convicted of these violent crimes, are getting the maximum sentences. You know, we're trying to send a message out to the community that we're taking these seriously and that if you do commit one of these violent crimes, you better get ready to pay the price with your life for the rest of your life.
That is so true. But Daryl, let me ask you a question. Is it most domestic violence situation?
Domestic violence surely has played a part in some of the violent crimes that we've seen. But, you know, to be honest with you, Cedric, a lot of it is folks who just don't have good conflict resolution skills. They get into an argument with each other, whether it's, you know, about money, drugs, women, whatever, and instead of settling it like you and I used to, you know, back in our day, when we were growing up, they settle it now by pulling out a gun and shooting a person. And that's the first thing that they resort to as opposed to trying to talk it out and, you know, discuss it. And, you know, it's just a culture that we have in the United States right now. Montgomery is not alone. This is a phenomenon that's happening all across our country. You know, Huntsville, Alabama, which is where I'm from originally, they're having the same type of problems up there, with murders. And, you know, you look at Birmingham and Mobile. I was talking to the DA from Mobile just day before yesterday, and she already had, I think this last calendar year, she had 111 murders just in 1 year in Mobile County. So, I mean, it's happening all over. But, you know, of course, what I'm concerned about is what's happening here in Montgomery County, and we want to try to make a difference in preventing that from happening here.
Let me ask you a question. Good question. Are the local leaders, pastors, or preachers, have they reached out to you for the community? Just to go in and just talk to people in different places and ask them, what the heck is going on? And is it because everybody's just mad? Or you know what I'm saying? It's like it's a lot of things. To be real, it's just baffling to me. The killings just one after another each day, it seems like, especially in Montgomery.
One of the things I think is a symptom of what's going on is that we have a very high dropout rate in Montgomery. You know, the dropout rate of folks not finishing school is enormous. And what happens, and what I see as a correlation, is that a lot of the folks who are being murdered, but definitely the ones who are doing the murders are high school dropouts. They didn't complete school. What happens is they drop out of school at a young age. They don't have an education, which means they can't get a good job. So they're out running the streets. They turn to drugs. They turn to other things, and just angry at the world. And what we're trying to do in my office is trying to work in the school systems and be proactive on the front end of crime, trying to keep kids from turning to a life of crime, to try to make a difference with that. I teach a class over at E.D. Nixon Elementary School, and we have four different schools in Montgomery that we're teaching at the same type of course. We go in, and it's called I Lead, is what I called it, and we go in and we teach them a curriculum about conflict resolution, about bullying, about economics, about making good ethical, moral choices. We bring in speakers who grew up in the neighborhoods around the school who face the same obstacles as these kids are facing, whether it be a single parent home, whether it be poverty, whether it be crime ridden neighborhoods, same exact obstacles, but these are folks who made it out of those neighborhoods and made themselves successful, but they did it through education. We're trying to show the kids that there is a way out of all this. And that is getting an education. One of the surveys I took with the kids, I said, raise your hand. How many of you have a close relative in prison? 100% raise their hand. And that's a problem. That's a huge problem.
That's a big problem.
I was talking to a fourth grader just this past week. A fourth grader. Now, he had gotten in trouble in the principal's office, and while I was there, I just wanted to check and see what was going on. He was not one of my students, but I just wanted to talk to him. And he was telling me that he's being raised by his grandmother. He doesn't know who his mother is, has no clue who his father is, and his grandmother is disabled. So automatically you got a lot of problems right there just with that situation. And he was just angry. And, I was telling him, I said, if you don't get your education, you're going to, he said, you don't have to tell me. I know what you're going to say. This is a fourth grader now. He said, I know where I'm going to wind up. And I said, what do you mean? No. He said, I'm going to wind up in jail.
Wow.
And I have a fourth grader who is, I don't know, what are they, 10 years old at that age, 9, 10 years old, telling me that he's going to wind up in jail. And that's a problem, Cedric. I mean, if you got fourth graders, and he's just one kid out of thousands in our school system that probably believe that, if we don't change that mindset and we don't be proactive as a community to give these kids some hope and give them some direction, we're going to be in trouble. And it's not a lot that government can do about it because I can't legislate parents. I can't say, hey, you got to be a good parent to your child, okay? I mean, it's just not a lot I can do unless they're breaking laws.
Yeah, that is true. And I wonder also in an aspect, is it because of, there are a lot of people out here, let's say that ex-felons or whatever, and they can't get a job. Mm-hmm. And they feel like, well, I have no other opportunity, but I got to do for my family, go up and try to pick up some person, rob, a kill. It's crazy, but it's a lot of things, and I'm trying to wonder about a lot of plays about, how can we better turn that statistic around as well, you know, because it's hard for guys that have been through the prison system or whatever, and they said, man, I want a job. I'm trying to get a job. But, you know, because of that record, you know that because of that record, it's hard. You know,
well,
and
Cedric,
that's one thing I'm trying.
So let me tell you this, that you're exactly right. And I try to tell the kids this. I mean, we tell the kids this all the time. I'm in the school system two or three times a week and talking to kids, whether it's my class or other classes. But I'm telling them that if you get a record, even at a young age, mm-hmm. it can affect the kind of job that you get later in life or, you know, affect you, your chances of getting a job. But let me tell you what we're doing for those who are already in the system, because I think that's important, too. I really do. People who have paid their debt to society, you know, as long as they haven't committed a violent crime, I mean, if you go out and kill somebody, I'm not helping you. You can forget that. I don't care what your situation is. You need to be in prison, okay? But for somebody who is, you know, got caught up in drugs or somebody's got caught up in a property crime, we have a pretrial diversion program here in the district attorney's office in Montgomery, and I'm wanting to grow it, and it's already getting really huge. And what we do is we give people a second chance. We bring them in, and my goal to my staff, my direction to the staff of the pretrial diversion program is I want you to make this person better off than they were when they came into the program. I want them to have job skills. I want them to have better education. I want them to, you know, have some community service under their belt. I want them to learn from their mistake and be better, a better person of it. If they complete that program, then they are able to get that record expunged, which means their crime comes off the record, their arrest comes off the record, and it's like it never happened. And we're changing lives.
Does the public know about this? A lot of people, are they hearing about this?
I don't know. You know, I try to talk about it. I mean, we've had press events about it. I use Facebook a lot about it. It's on our website.
Yeah.
Every defense attorney, criminal defense attorney in Montgomery knows about it, so they can refer their clients to it. So, you know, I hope so. I mean, I really do. But we've got a lot of partners. As a matter of fact, we just partnered with Trenum. They're going to be setting up GED classes over in our offices. So to make it easier for the folks that are on our program that do not have GED or have high school diploma to get that taken care of. So we're trying to partner with others to get some job skill training and that type of thing. Do you know the Alabama Department of Labor came and met with me about a year ago, and they were telling me that there is a huge shortage in the state of Alabama right now for welders and plumbers. Both of them started around $25 to $30 an hour. Can you believe that? You don't have to have an education. You don't have to be, you know, have straight A's or, you know, have a college degree. You just have to have the technical trade skills to be able to perform that job. But they said they cannot get enough people to try to learn the trade. They'll even pay for the, there are even scholarships to pay for the classes when you go through these schools. But they can't find enough people to do the job.
Isn't that something? Wow. Well, I'm glad you're letting my listeners know about this. So everyone that doesn't, and really, like I said, and does have a record, they can go out for these skills and this training with the Alabama Employment Office. They go through the labor. How just say that again. Tell them again how they can go.
The folks that talked to me was the Alabama Department of Labor. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure how, you know, you could probably call them and figure out how you get into one of the schools or, you know, how to figure out how to do that. Probably Google it online. You know, you do that with just about everything these days. Yeah, I'm not an expert on that part of it, but I do know from what they told me there are plenty of jobs out there for welders and plumbers making anywhere starting salary, $25 to $30 an hour.
Man, that is amazing. And right now, Darryl, I'm going to go to a short commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about what the people in the community can do to help curb some violence and different things. And, you know, I'll let you observe that. And when we come back, we'll talk to you more in depth about that. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with my host, Darryl Bell.
Hallelujah. You have won the victory. The lift up your voice and say now. You have won it all for me.
All right, we are back with WKRP Live Talk. And my very special guest, Mr. Darrell Bailey from the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office. And we're here talking about, well, you know, it's violence. The craziness of it all. And we're trying to, I guess there's no rational solution we can come to this when it comes to a person taking someone's life, unless it's in self-defense. But what we're talking about is just trying to shed some light. I had someone that hit me up on Facebook and said, why talk about it? It's still going to happen. They're going to do what they want to do. They're going to kill and all this. So why, Darrell, he's just wasting his breath. And then I thought about it, and I told the gentleman, but yeah, but you have to talk about certain things. You're just going to keep letting it go on and on, and no one's saying anything to try and curb this violence. If we can just talk to, say, one person, two or three, however it is, that's something shedding some light in somebody's life and letting them know you got to think before you react to certain, you know, certain things.
And well, Cedric, I was going to say, I truly believe that the message that we're putting out in the community about, you know, if you commit a violent crime, you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life, that is resonating in the community. And I think there are a lot of folks who are who would be the type of folks who would pull out a gun and shoot somebody that are thinking twice about it now because of what we're doing.
That's
and
good.
The message that we're sending out. But the other thing about it, and where I disagree with the person who said that, is I think we can do something about it. And what we can
That's
do
right.
about it is reach these young people before they have that mindset. You know, talking about these fifth graders that I was talking to you about earlier, when I talk to them about what they want to be when they grow up, a lot of these fifth graders want to be police officers or judges or teachers.
Exactly.
Or, you know, they have dreams. A lot of them want to be pro athletes.
Yeah.
But something happens between fifth grade and when they go into middle school in sixth grade, they start losing that dream, they start losing that focus, and they get kind of lost in the system. And you start talking to seventh and eighth graders, and they no longer have those dreams. They can't tell you what they want to be when they grow up. And quite honestly, a lot of them don't see themselves living past the age of 21, 22, or see themselves in prison. And that's where we're messing up. We've got to do something to reach our young people, because if we can reach our young people, give them hope, give them the skills they need, give them the desire to succeed, then you're not going to have all these violent crimes.
That's so true, man. That's exactly what I was saying to that person that put that there. And he's like, I wouldn't hold my breath. He said, maybe they went to church before they shot somebody. I'm like, man, this is crazy.
But anyway,
I feel like everyone deserves a chance, you know, and a chance to live. Like you were just saying, you have to catch people while they're young. And just let them know, you know, hey, you are somebody. You're going through something right now that I've went through, I've experienced, but you're going to make it. And you don't have to join a gang to make it. And you don't have to go out and rob and steal or kill to make it. My grandmother gave me value with that, and my mother, you know, and I thank them for that. And just letting anyone else know to talk to your kids and let them know, man, you know, they don't have to. Even if they're not your kid, they have mentoring, different mentors.
I encourage people all the time to, if you see a child out there that, you know, maybe being raised, you know, by a mother who's working all kinds of jobs, trying to provide for that child, doing the very best you can to raise that child, help her out, you know, give her some help, be a mentor to her child, you know, do what you can to try to fill a void in that child's life. Because quite honestly, right now, we do not have enough positive male role models in the community willing to work with these kids and be those role models. We've got plenty of male role models in the community, but they're not the positive ones. And that's unfortunately what a lot of our kids are resonating to or being attracted to. For instance, in our class this past week, I asked the kids, I said, how many of you are in a gang? you know, and unfortunately, there's about 10 kids raised their hands. You know, they're in the Crip, Bloods, some of the local gangs, and they do it because they're accepted, you know, to be cool. And what happens is these gangs use these young people like that to go out and commit some of these violent crimes that we're seeing, such as the robberies, as part of their gang initiation or a way to get money and that type of thing. We see that all day, every day. And it's crazy stuff like that's happening. But the kids are looking for acceptance. They're looking for role models. They're looking for, especially men, to resonate to that they want to pattern their lives out after. And unfortunately, right now, it's the wrong folks that they're being attracted to.
I do. I understand it, man. And it's sad, but it, you know, it happens, like you say. And another thing I want to ask you about is the people and police relation. Now, how is that being affected? How's that been going on lately? The sense of, you know, certain things that have happened with police and people feel like, you know, with people being shot and killed, you know, and different. And right now, you're going through something like that right now with the tragedy that happened in Montgomery about a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, and let's just say that's a hard pill to swallow, but how has it affected the relations with you all in the community?
Well, you know, obviously police and citizen relations is very, very important, and it's very important to what we do because, you know, we work very closely with law enforcement to make the cases that we have. And obviously, jurors who are ultimately deciding cases, whether it's through a grand jury or through a petit jury system, are the ones that make decisions, and they have to be able to rely on us as prosecutors and law enforcement to bring these cases and trust that the cases they're bringing them are legitimate. So, you know, police and law enforcement relations with the community is extremely important. It's very important that the community trust law enforcement. And, you know, I've said this probably 1,000 times since March 1st, but I'll say it again, is that, you know, 99% of the police officers in Montgomery do an exceptional job. They go risk their lives every day, putting their lives on the line to, you know, protect our community. And they do it with honor. They do a great job in protecting us and doing it the right way. Unfortunately, in every business, you're going to have somebody who's not doing it the right way, who's not following the rules, not following what the training that they have. You know, we have it in our office. Unfortunately, we have to deal with it in every business across our city and across the United States. That happens. And when you have a law enforcement agency such as a police department that is as huge as it is, like 400 and something officers, you're going to have some that are just not rule followers that are going to, you know, buck the system. And that's unfortunate. But the vast majority of police officers in our community are doing it for the right reason and are treating people with respect and are going about doing their business with professionalism and the way that they were trained.
That's awesome, and that's so true. Well, and that's, I guess, why one of the reasons why I mentioned that, too, because, you know, now it's like a lot of people are actually about scared if a policeman might pull them over. Some people in the community are like, I just don't know. But, you know, I'm going to say all police, like you said, they're good and they're bad, and there's in everyone. You know,
sure.
Some people, I guess, they overstep their bounds. I used to say, well, is it because of the power syndrome? Or, you know, because I used to look at Andy Griffith's show, you know, Barney Fife.
Yeah,
When he got that bullet. When he got that bullet in that gun, he has some power, you know. But
absolutely,
But and then we have to look at the other person's point of view too, you know, because of that person. I don't care what color or anything. I don't believe in that. I just believe in love, you know. You know, I serve for Jesus, and I just love everybody. But some people, you know, have a problem with that.
No matter if you're a police officer or if you're a prosecutor or you're the district attorney, judge, you need to treat people with respect. You need to take people
That's
as
right.
they are and treat everybody with respect. And that's a problem that we have in our society right now. It's not a lot of people have good social skills. You know, there's a video circulating on Facebook right now between a guy who's making all kinds of racist comments at a lady at an ATM machine.
And Yeah, I saw that.
You know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you know, people like that are what is setting race relations back. But a vast majority of the people in this community, they get along with each other. They work together every day. They love and trust each other. But and a lot of it is based on just mutual respect. You get to know somebody, you respect them and love them. I had a minister ask me one time. He was asking me about race relations, and he said, "What's the problem? Why is race relations so bad?" And I said, "Well, first of all, I don't think race relations are as bad as some people perceive them. But here's my answer to that is that, you know, in the church that I was speaking to, it was 100% African American." And I said, part of the problem is that, you know, we're going our separate ways. You know, we both believe in the same God. We both worship very similarly, you know, that type of thing. But why do we have to be separate? You know, why can't we do these type of things together? You know, I gave an example of my chief deputy district attorney. She's an African-American female. I said I'd give my life to protect her or her family because I know her. I love her. I've worked with her for 20 years. You know, she is a dear friend of mine and, you know, a colleague. But any of the people out in the audience that I was speaking to, I said, I wouldn't give my life for you because I don't know you. I don't know you. I have no idea who you are, you know. I mean, and that's part of the problem is we got to get to know each other. We've got to, and once you get to know a person, you understand where they're coming from. You know, you understand the struggles that they have in life, but you also understand that they bleed just like you do. They hurt just like you do. They have a lot of the same problems that just like you do. And I think once we have that understanding, then we begin to appreciate each other a little bit more.
Yeah. Now, that is so awesome, man. And that's the truth. Yeah, because I see you all the time, man, and especially on the media, Facebook. So you're going to different churches, and just I'm like, wow, that is so cool. I'm like, if you don't watch out, Darryl, he's going to run for some office, man.
Well, I'm happy being district attorney. I really am. If you know my story, this is something that I've wanted to do since I was a child. And, you know, I'm living out my dream. This is really what I love to do. But I think it's important to go out to various churches and to social events and get out into the community so folks can see who their DA is. Because, let's face it, at some point in time, the people in the community, I have to convince that a person is guilty of a crime. I mean, they're the ones that say it. I can't, you know, say a person's guilty and it's, you know, be upheld. It has to be a jury. And I want those folks to trust me that when I say something, they're going to believe it. And, it's not just somebody they see, you know, around election time. It's somebody that they see truly cares about their community and is trying to do something to – because, I mean, let's face it, I live here. My kids are being raised in Montgomery, Alabama, and I want this to be a good community. I want it to be a safe community. I don't want to have to have my kids just stay in the house and lock the doors. I want them to be out. I take my kids with me to a lot of these events that we go to. But, you know, the deal is everybody should be able to feel safe in our community. You shouldn't be fearful of walking out your doors and getting shot or walking out your doors and getting robbed. And everything that I can do to try to prevent it, I'm going to do. But, you know, it's a constant struggle. I mean, it really is.
I know it's an uphill journey. And you most definitely, man, I mean, have your hands full. And I think that everybody should be praying for you because, you know, everybody looks at the DA, oh, he's a bad guy, he just wants to lock people up. But it's not about that with him, with you. And, no. And like you were just saying, you believe in trying to help turn somebody, if you can, life around those that want it. You know, you can't force anything upon anybody, but those that do want it, you know, younger or however, and I commend you for that. And that's great. And that's another part of you have to see as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that gives me legitimacy because there's no – and I hear this from time to time. People say, oh, you're just trying to lock everybody up. You're just trying to get a notch in your belt or trying to, you know, get a political office or whatever. But, you know, what I do is I challenge those folks. I said, you don't see me out there – well, I'm not saying that right. You see me out there in the community. You see me in these schools. You see me doing the things that the folks who are complaining about are not doing. You know,
That's right.
If I didn't care, you know, there's a plenty of DAs across the United States. They sit in their office or sit in the courtrooms, and all they do is put people in prison day in, day out. That's all they do. That's all they're required to do. That's all I'm required to do under the law. But I'm not. I'm out in the community working with our kids every single day, trying to figure out a way to keep our kids from turning to a life of crime. That's not a part of my job, but it's a part of my passion.
Amen. And I would almost say, like to say too, it's like a part of your ministry that you have.
It is. Well, it is a ministry.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And like I say again, I commend you for it, you know, and because there are a lot of kids that are going through things in life, you know, because we went through those things. But nowadays, these kids, they don't know how to handle certain things or who to turn to, you know. And so some of them might attach themselves to someone that's going through a life of crime. They figure, like, oh, this is where I should go. Until that light shines upon them with somebody else, like, coming into the light saying, no, you shouldn't do that like you're doing. And that is a great ministry.
I
pray that everybody looks and commends you for that. Right now, we're going to take another commercial break, and we'll be back with my guest, Mr. Daryl Bailey. And stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short commercial break.
Hallelujah. You have won the victory. Lift up your voice and say now. You have won it all for me.
Okay, and we're back with WKRP Live. And if you missed it, I'm on the line with Mr. Daryl Bailey. He's my special guest for today. And we're talking about a problem, like I said, problematic thing in Alabama as well as Montgomery, all around the world. I'm not just going to say Montgomery. There's a lot of things going on around the world. Our crime has picked up, man, profusely. There's a lot of things that in killing and murders, just like the district attorney said. But the main point we're trying to pinpoint the thing is getting the young people while it's talking to them, you know, being an inspiration in their lives, and just showing them what a true leader is. They don't have to be with the bad crowds. You don't have to do the things that other people do. You know, and he has a great program. He's working with mentoring young individuals, and that's a truly blessing. And while we're talking about that, I'm going to do this commercial for Southview Worship Center. Southview Worship Center in Hainesville, Alabama, where miracles are happening under the leadership of Pastor Carl Bell and Associate Pastor Helena Bell. So please come out to Southview. Start Sunday from 8:30. And also Bible study around 7 o'clock every Thursday. Come out to Southview Worship Center where they're making miracles. God is using an anointed man of God and his wife. And just when you come into place, because I attend there too, I'm just saying it's prevalent. And it's an awesome ministry that God had for them down in Lowndes County. And if you would, to my listeners, come out on Sunday and just worship with us. That's right. Southview Worship Center in Hainesville, Alabama. All right. Now we're back with my guest and Mr. Daryl Bailey. And if any callers we have, and they want, feel free to call in, and the call lines are open. If they have any questions or whatever they want to ask, this good attorney, Mr. Daryl Bailey. Daryl.
Yeah.
My friend. Yeah, man. Oh, yeah. Daryl. As we were talking and everything, tell the folks about I remember when you were saying about your story, about how you always wanted to be in, I guess, I don't want to say DA, but you always wanted to be in a justice system.
You know, it's a weird story, but yes, I've always wanted to be a DA, actually. I've had two goals, work goals in life. And when I was young, my first one was to be a sanitation worker, was to be a garbage man. I loved this is before school started. I, you know, go out and anytime I'd hear the garbage truck coming down the street, I'd run out and watch them, you know, do that, pull that little lever and that thing came down and compacted all the trash. Loved it. I mean, I just thought that was the coolest thing. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to be one of the guys riding on the back of the truck. And one day I went outside and they let me pull the little lever. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever, man. I was the you know, riding cloud nine after they let me do that. And but after that day, I was kind of over it. I was like, all right, you know, time for me to figure out something else I want to do. And first grade came along, and totally at random, my first grade teacher picked me to play a prosecutor in our first grade play. And my job as the prosecutor was to prosecute Sugar for causing a cavity in a little boy's tooth. And so they dressed me up in a little coat and a tie that went down to the floor, and I won my first case. Sugar was found guilty. And I said, man, I like this. I like this. So ever since first grade, anytime anybody asked me, hey, what do you want to do when you grow up? I said, I want to be a prosecutor. I want to be a DA. And so here I am. I'm one of the few kids that is actually living out my dream. But ever since first grade, this is what I wanted to do. And I love my job. I come to work every day. You know, it's a lot of challenges, a lot of stress, but it's, hey, it's what I want to do.
That is awesome. I call you a true visionary because you spoke that thing when you were young.
Yeah. You know, what's so great about my job is getting to help people. You know, I love being able to, you know, work with families that, you know, maybe they're going through a very tragic event in their life. You know, something horrible has happened. And, you know, it could be, on the flip side of that, it could be somebody who had their cell phone stolen. You know, two extremes. But what I love is being able to work with them and help them and get them some type of satisfaction in the justice system and hopefully get them some justice. And I love meeting people and love helping people, especially kids and older folks.
Yeah, man, because you do. I got to say this because my family went through a time, me and my grandfather, we came down there. That's the time, you know, my uncle, who worked for the sheriff's department, but his life was tragically taken by his strange wife, Lucille, you know. And that was a very hard thing for having to come and, you know, and to do what we did with a party situation. But, you know, God, how can I say, he had the people right there, which is Ellen. She likes for me to call her Ellen, not Miss Brooke, but Ellen.
Yeah,
and it's just you know, you guys were there, and I thank you for that. I really do. I really commend you for that, because you guys handled it for us, and that was great. And you know, he lived to see that. He lived after that about, I guess, a year. He reached the age of 99.
Wow!
Lord, yeah, man. The good Lord had called him home, but he lived to go through. He wanted to see that transition.
Yeah.
It
was great meeting him and getting to talk with him. I mean, you know, I tell you, in this job, I get to meet so many good people and good folks, and it's good to hear stories like that where we've been able to help someone. You know, I see people out in the community that I was able to help maybe 20 years ago. I've been doing this for almost 20 or over 20 years now, and it's good to see people that I've helped along the way, and that just makes you feel good.
I know it does, man. And another thing I was asking you, I remember earlier, about what can the community do? What can we as people, you know, do? Everybody, you know, wants to carry the ball, but, you know, no one wants to be a servant, like you were saying, serving people. What can we as people in the community do to help curb some of this crime as well? You know, your forefront. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that people can do, but you know, the chief thing that they can do is get involved in kids' lives. You know, do something volunteering, whether it's mentoring, you know, volunteering at the YMCA, you know, just finding kids in the neighborhood that you can help out, you know, whatever, you know, just trying to help our kids out because they really, really need it. It is a tough time that we live in right now. And so number one is to do that. The second thing is to help us in crime solving. You know, part of the problems that we have right now in cases that are unsolved is because a lot of the community don't want to get involved. And, you know, I tell people, if you see it, say it. You know, if you see a crime going on or you know something about it, let us know so that we can do something about it or it's not going to stop. You know, a lot of people have fear. They don't want to get involved for various reasons, maybe out of fear. But, you know, there's ways that we can protect folks that come forward and give us information. So, you know, the two biggest things that I can tell people to do to get involved is, number one, work with our kids. You know, volunteer in the school system, volunteer, you know, in the neighborhoods, and especially in the summertime. You know, get some programs going to help these kids out. But they need good, positive men and women mentors and role models.
I got you. We have a caller calling in. Her name is Tamika. Are you there? Okay. The call dropped. Okay. But anyway, that's true what you were saying about the mentoring program, because that's a lot of things that we as people sometimes we forget about the younger generation, you know, and that is so true to go out and be a mentor to people, because you see a lot of men, you know, as I used to drive around my grandma late at night, you see a lot of little kids be walking the street. I mean, like look like they'd be about 5 or 6 or 7. I'm like, does their parent know that they're out? About and the time could be about 11 or 12 o'clock. And they seem to be strolling by themselves. I'm like, Lord.
Yeah, you know, and that's a problem, too. You know, another program that we've developed in my office is the Helping Montgomery Families Initiative. And through that program, we work with the Montgomery Public School System for kids who have been suspended from school or who are truant from school. The kids who have been suspended from school, we'll send a team of social workers into that family's household and find out what's going on. It's not a program that we're there, you know, looking for warrants or looking, you know, for drugs or anything like that. We're actually there to help, and we try to get to the root of the matter. What is causing that child to miss school? One of the things that we have found are unaddressed mental health issues, you know, whether it be domestic violence also in the household, drugs. But unaddressed mental health issues is the biggest one. And what we try to do is partner the families up with some resources that are already available in the community, and the goal being to get those kids back in school so that they can learn. The other program that we have with that is working with truant kids that have missing too many days from school. And one of the things that we do with that is we have an early warning program. You know, if you have a school, a child that has 3, 4, or 5 missing days and they don't have a legitimate excuse, we bring them up here to the courthouse along with their parent or guardian, and we talk to them about the consequences, the road that they're going down, and what will happen to them if they don't get an education and they don't stay in school. And but the great thing about that program is we have resources there in that room for the parents to talk to and to try to get some help with whatever situation that is causing the child to miss school. The goal is to get the kids in school and keep them in school because, you know, I tell the kids all the time in these early warning meetings along with the parents, I said, you know, one missed day of learning, you've missed a lot. You know, it may be math, you know, the teacher teaching about a way to do math problems, and you come in the next day, you don't have that knowledge, and you're already behind. You're behind a lot. And I know when I was growing up, man, if I missed a day of math class, I already didn't get math. I was already a poor math student. If I missed a day, I was really going to be in trouble. So, yeah. And I tell them, I said, you know, with my own kids, you know, it's none of this, hey, I don't feel like going to school or I'm too tired because I stayed up too late the night before or whatever. It's every day the doors are open, they're going to be in school unless, you know, I hate to get graphic, but I tell them, unless I see you throwing up or you got a fever, you going to school. There's no missing school in my household.
That's right.
And every parent needs to have that same mindset. If they have that, because it all starts at home. You as a parent are setting the standard for what your children should follow. And if you let them miss school just because, you know, whatever, and I mean, we had some kids, you know, September, October, who had already missed like 15, 20 days of school. That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that's
with no excuse.
With no excuse,
huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, that is something, because in our household, man, you had to go to school and you had to go to church. Yeah, that you can't. Somebody don't feel like going to church either, man.
Hey, no doubt about it. And I think we got to get back to that. I mean, we really do. I mean, it was the same in my household. I wasn't allowed to miss school, and I certainly wasn't allowed to miss church. And in my household, my mom and dad, we went Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, and then any other special night that the church had going on. And it wasn't, I can remember going to my mom and dad when the fair was in town and had a bunch of friends going on a Wednesday night. My mom doesn't know you're going to church. And, you know, that made me so mad at the time. I mean, I had the worst parents in the world, not realizing, you know, today I've got the best parents in the world that really cared about my future. But they were setting that standard for me. It was like, you don't miss church. You know, every time the doors are open to the church, you're there. Every time the doors are open to the school, you're there. If we can get back to that in our society, I think we're going to be a lot better off.
You're right, man. And one thing I sure truly hate, too, that when they took prayer out of school, that it just, whoa, I couldn't believe it.
Even more tragic than that is that the government has not taken prayer out of the homes, but it's out in a lot of homes. And so, you know, that's even more tragic than taking it out of the schools. You don't have prayer in the homes right now. And, you know, that's nobody's fault but the people who run in the household.
That's right. That's right. You're so right, Darryl, and that's true. It starts at home. You know, we can send them to school here, but you have to raise them at home. You know, the teacher only can do what they can do at that certain length of time, but it's up to us to raise them at home.
Because ain't nobody telling my child they can't pray at school. Your child can pray at school all they want to. You know, they might not be able to, the teacher may not be able to stand up and pray or whatever, but your child can. But it's a part of teaching your child about the importance of prayer. So, I mean, it's all about priorities. You got to teach them about the importance of prayer. You got to teach them about the importance of schooling, respect, on down the line.
That's right. And we're about to take another short, now last commercial break of the day. And we'll be right back with my special guest, Mr. Darryl Bailey, and we are WKRP Live. We'll be right back.
Hallelujah. You have won the victory. Lift up your voice and say now. You have won it all for me.
All right, we're back with WKRP Live. And my special guest is Mr. Darryl Bailey, Montgomery County District Attorney. And we've been talking about violence and the things that have been going on in Montgomery, but not just about violence, but we've been talking about other good stuff, too, about how you can be a mentor in somebody's life, a young person's life, and help turn it around before it results into an act of violence or anything, you know, because there are consequences for our actions. And that's one good thing I'm thankful for, Mr. Baylor, Darryl Bailey, for saying, and because everybody looks at him like, oh, he just wants to lock you up. But no, he wants to help. He wants to help not only just those incarcerated, but the young people that are coming up. You know, you start while they're young. And help, you know, try to keep them on the road to the right pathway. Isn't that right, Darryl?
That's exactly right. You know, it's, you know, I don't get a lot of joy out of sending somebody to prison for the rest of their life. The The reason for that is because if I'm sending somebody to prison for the rest of their life, they've done something really bad, and there's a family out there that's usually missing a loved one, or you know, have a loved one that's been hurt, and you know, that's tragic all the way around. But it's a necessary part of the job, and I don't shy away from it. If you do something bad, you commit a violent crime, then that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to send you to prison for the rest of your life. I'm certainly going to advocate for that anyway. But at the same time, I get more joy, more satisfaction out of helping a young person or helping, you know, one of our seniors.
That's true. Now, let me ask you something. Like you were saying, the question about the ones that have been away in for a violent crime. But when I say a person gets out, do you think that person is able to turn their life around and be an upstanding person in society? Once they
very
turn?
Very rarely does that happen. I mean, there's some well documented cases, and I know, you know, a particular person that lives right here in Montgomery that did just that. So I mean, it happens, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, it doesn't happen enough because, you know, prison is not a rehabilitative place. I mean, prison
is a
punishment place. They're not there to try to make you
That's
better.
True.
They're not there to try to make you a better person or, you know, give you certain social skills or job skills. I mean, prison is a horrible place. It's a punishment place.
That's true.
You know, I don't care what anybody says. So, you know, you're going to very rarely are you going to find a person who's able to come out of prison and change their life around, especially if they've been there a while. You know, one of the things when we were talking about our pretrial diversion program, that program is 93% of the people that complete it, that graduate from that program, never get in trouble again, which means, you know, only 7% of the folks who don't complete the program or complete the program get arrested again. So that's a great statistic. But if you look at people who are put on probation, that statistic's about 50%. About 50% of the people who have been put on probation get in trouble again. About 75 to 80% of the people who go to prison get in trouble again. So, you know, those are pretty high statistics. So I believe in this pretrial diversion and trying to help people. But, you know, some people, they just need to go to prison.
Yeah.
Let's face it. I mean, you know, that's just where they need to be. And
you're right.
So,
it is what it is. And some, like I said, some people are willing to change. It's just some, unfortunately, it's just not. And, you know, they, like you said, deserve to be what it be. And also, I wanted to bring up, what do you think about with the governor's plan? He wants to build more prison. Is that, you thinking that's the way to go? Or how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, there's certainly a lot of people in prison. One of the things that I have seen from the sentencing commissions that have been established by the legislature and by the governor is that most of the mm-hmm. people that are in our prisons right now in Alabama are there because of a violent offense. You know, a lot of people say, well, our prisons are full of drug offenders, and that's just absolutely not true. It's absolutely not true for Montgomery. I can tell you that, because we've got so many programs to address that. You're not going to prison if you have marijuana or cocaine or whatever. If you're selling it, that may be a different story, or if you know, just got a whole bunch of it. But for simple possession or for possession of drugs, that's not happening. So most of our prison, I think the latest statistic I saw was like 85% of the people in prison are there because of a violent offense. So, you know, if we need to build more prisons to have room for people who have committed violent offenses, then I'm okay with that, you know, if that's what we have to do. I think what we have in place right now are a lot of programs, a lot of systems in place to try to keep people who have committed nonviolent offenses out of the prison system, whether it be through the many diversion programs we have, the many steps in the criminal justice system that are set up to help young people. You know, people don't realize it, but sometimes when we have somebody before us who's committed an offense, not necessarily a violent mm-hmm. offense, but let's say they committed breaking in a house, that they've already been through the juvenile system 10 or 15 times or more. They have, once they get to the adult system, they're given things such as youthful offender treatment, and they can get that as many times as the judge wants to give it to them. They also go through diversion programs, which, as I told you earlier, is not on their record. So they could have been throughout the criminal justice system probably 30 times before a judge finally decides to send them to prison. So even the ones that are there on nonviolent offenses have had, you know, 30 chances in the criminal justice system, and they just refuse to take advantage of it. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know enough about the politics of it or the, you know, the dollars and the cents, but I support building a prison if it's not enough room for violent offenders.
Yeah, I understand that. And now, Darryl, one quick question. I got to ask, man, because it is mind-blowing. You know, in my heart, always coming to believe drugs were just bad. You know, they're illegal. You get thrown in jail. You know, they're no good. But now we have states that are saying it's legal. They're legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
Now that, and people have been going to jail for these things, you know, for marijuana and everything. I'm like, well, are they going to let them out once they pass these laws? That is kind of crazy, man.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, they're still illegal in the state of Alabama. But, you know, one of the things that I fear out of all this is that we're sending a mixed message to our children.
True.
And the mixed message is that, hey, it's okay to do some drugs, or it's okay to do drugs. You know, some other states are, you know, they're fine with it. But I think we got to get back to why these things were illegal to begin with. And instead of focusing on sending people to prison like they did in the 80s and early 90s for simple drug possessions and all that, we need to focus more on the treatment and trying to get people off of drugs.
Right.
I don't think sending people to prison is the answer, but I also don't think legalizing it and then, you know, telling our kids it's okay to do them is the answer either.
Amen.
Because, you know, people say, well, what about alcohol? Well, I'm not the one to ask about that because I don't drink, and I think that's just as bad, too.
Yeah.
Some of the drugs. So, you know, well, what about cigarettes? Well, I don't think a kid should be smoking either. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude about everything, but, you know, I don't think, you know, these young minds that we have, they don't need to be polluted by drugs. I have seen, you know, most of the crime that we deal with, probably 85% or more of the crime we deal with is drug-related in some fashion. You know, if the guy's breaking in your house, he's usually doing it so he can go buy some drugs, or he's on drugs is the reason he did it. Most of the murders we have something to do with some type of drug transaction or drug-related. So drugs are a big part of what's happening in the criminal justice system. They're also a big part of people overdosing, dying. There's a huge epidemic right now with kids dying over, spice and heroin and those type of drugs. So, you know, I don't think legalizing it's the answer. I don't think sending them to prison is the answer. I think we've got to do a better job in the criminal justice system and in society focusing on the treatment.
Amen to that. Well, Darryl, I truly appreciate you being on WKRP Live Talk today. And I know my listeners have. I pray that they got some informative information, because I sure have. And I want to tell you again, I hope for in the near future to invite you back again so we can talk more about your programs as well as your initiative with young people. And actually, hopefully, you can bring someone on as well. We get them, bring someone so they can talk about how the program has helped them.
Absolutely. Cedric, anytime. If people want to reach out to me, they can call the DA's office here at 832-2550. Or believe it or not, most people hit me up on Facebook nowadays. You can go to my personal page,
like
Darryl Bailey. Yeah, Darryl Bailey, D-A-R-Y-L Bailey, or our office webpage, Facebook page, which is Montgomery County District Attorney.
All right, then. Okay, like again, I truly thank you, and I pray that you have a blessed day and continue on the fight, man. And I know you have your work cut out for you. And to my listeners, thank you all for listening to WKRP Live. I am T. Miller, and until again, next week we will have Representative Thad McClemmie from the State House. Representative Thad McClemmie, he'll be here. And so until then, God bless you, and we're out.